Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mrs. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th of September, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray. Trying to plug something in on the other side of the board.
Right. And in 5 minutes after the hour, you know, the studio is so small, it shouldn't have taken that much time to get back over
here. You don't have to run around a great distance.
Right. We're going to be bringing you news, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know the story.
Yeah.
Gee, did anything happen this week?
Gee, I don't know.
It was a pretty quiet week. Oh, yeah, there was that one thing. Apple made their big announcement, and it's everything that the Apple fanboys have been lusting after. Three new iPhones, new Apple TV, new Apple Watch, facial recognition, bad 90s era emoji animation, Steve Jobs invoked over and over and over. It was Apple-palooza at its best. Let's start with the iPhones. The iPhone X, pronounced iPhone 10, is Apple's $1,000 anniversary device with an edge-to-edge OLED display, facial recognition, and no home button. Gasp. The iPhone X was sort of a showstopper, but Apple announced the new iPhone 8 and 8 Plus that are more akin to last year's iPhone 7 models. AirPower is Apple's new wireless charging technology that works with iPhone 10 and iPhone 8 models, but it's not available yet, and as the rest of us know, it's actually called Qi, Qi. And I've been using it for 2.5 years on my phone. I love it. It is incredibly convenient.
And it is rather unusual for Apple to use an existing standard to make their own.
That to me was the most exciting thing about the entire announcement, because it means there's going to be new charging stations for my phone.
Yep.
Because Qi is Qi is Qi is Qi. Then there's the Apple Watch. Apple Watch Series 3 brings LTE connectivity to the watch for the first time, in addition to a barometric altimeter for stair counting. And, of course, another phone charge. The newly announced Apple TV 4K gives Apple set-top box a big update with 4K and HDR capabilities. Metal 2 and the A10X. Is that A1010 or A10X? Fusion chip. I'd be interested to know how many of you out there have 4K TVs and are actually happy with them. I have several friends who are very disappointed in their 4K TVs. They're too sharp. They take them out of the moment. iDevices can download iOS 11 on September 19th, bringing the new Files app, an updated control center, drag and drop features to iPads, and more. Watch OS 4 comes out September 19th, updating Apple Watch models with a Siri watch face, an updated workout app with an HIIT option, whatever that is, and improved swim tracking and heart rate and rhythm monitoring software. And the new iPhones will be available in November. Yeah, November. And Apple stock took a hit. It's slowly coming up, but it's still a couple of points down from what it was on Tuesday before the announcement. So how come Wall Street is unhappy? Well, much of it has to do with the timing. Although Apple did announce that new stuff this week, like I said, you won't be able to buy the iPhone 8 or the 10 until November, which means a pretty short sell for the Christmas season. The other reason, it's all very expensive stuff, and Wall Street's not entirely sure even the most devoted Apple fanatics will think that animated emojis in a pretty new case are worth $1,000. And frankly, there were a lot of empty spaces during the presentation where they were clearly expecting applause, and there was none. Time will tell. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple-palooza. And our choices are, I'm so excited, I'm interested, I'm disappointed, and Apple who now? So far, we've got 23 votes. Apple, who now is 70% of them, followed by I'm disappointed. So of the Apple contingent, many of you are disappointed. Now, I know you'll have more to say about this in particular. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And at the moment, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 16 September 17, Applepalooza. Only a couple of posts so far. You're welcome to join us there. And, of course, you can join us here at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. It's like I said, the problem I had with it is that, I missed the beginning where apparently they attempted to resurrect Steve Jobs.
Well, it was the first announcement for, in fact, the first event period at the new Apple Park campus, and it was held in the Steve Jobs Theater, big round theater in the front, and so they talked a bit about Steve and you know why they named the theater after him and his vision and whatnot, and then they talked a little bit about the hurricane relief and how Apple is part of the hurricane relief fund.
Nice.
To be able to donate to, and. The Apple campus was apparently the last project left that Steve Jobs had a hand in.
Oh.
And so this is sort of brought up memories of Steve for everybody.
Right. And Tim Cook was very choked up.
Yeah.
About it. He
was brought into Apple, 20 years ago as the chief operating officer.
He's
the guy that made things run. So Steve had the grand visions and Tim made them happen.
Well, and of course, what the critics are saying now is there are no more grand visions. Interesting to me was, I mentioned it in the news when I wrote that, I mentioned that there were a lot of empty spaces in the speeches where they clearly stopped assuming there would be applause. Because, you know, they rehearse these things down to the nets.
But everybody, ooh, and la, and
Right. And so there were pauses where they expected people to applaud, and nobody did.
Oops.
That's horribly embarrassing anytime an actor does that.
They didn't have enough fanboys in the audience. It was mostly press.
usually they'll have clackers. They'll have somebody who starts the applause.
Yep.
In fact, I think the biggest applause of the evening, quite frankly, was when they said they're going to bring back the glass cubes as their stores. It just got wild applause. And that was at the beginning before they... Yeah. Disappointed everybody with everything else.
Well, I'm surprised they didn't have somebody there with signs saying applaud.
Right. You know, they probably did.
Like,
Apple Watch 3 has some really nice things. It has built-in cellular, and you can have the same number as your iPhone. That doesn't mean you don't pay for a second line.
It's $10 a month from the U.S. carriers.
Right.
Which is always annoying. You pay for the data, and then they want you to pay again for the device.
Right.
So I read someone had a really neat analogy. You buy a pizza, and the pizza shows up. It's $10 for the pizza. If you eat it yourself, if you're going to share it with your spouse, it's $15. If you're going to let your kids eat some of it, it's $20.
Yep.
No, that doesn't make sense. Yep. We're paying for the pizza,
and you can You can stream Apple Music to your wrist, and then your wrist will stream it to your earphones. I don't know what the price of the watch is, but that's not going to sell me on it.
You buy a watch.
It could be a $10 watch, and that's not going to sell me on it.
You buy a watch so you don't have to carry your phone all the time.
Uh-huh.
And they're targeting that toward runners and exercise, where you don't want the bulk of the phone
hanging
on your wrist or your waist or something. So you can do it all on your watch.
The watch does have a dual-core processor, 70% faster. And he made this big deal out of Siri. You can talk to Siri on your watch. Nobody applauded.
Siri can answer. The big feature is Siri can answer. You could talk to her before, but now she can answer.
Right. Nobody applauded. And it does have a barometric altimeter, so it'll tell you the 3 days a year you actually climb a set of stairs. The iPhone 8 will have lots of cores and faster multiprocessing, an Apple-designed GPU, 3 cores, 30% faster. And then the iPhone 10, yes, it's an X, but it's pronounced 10, just like OS 10. It's the iPhone 10. Edge-to-edge, glass front and back, surgical grade, stainless steel, water and dust resistant.
So when do these all come out, though?
November.
Well, the 8 will be out next week. Pre-orders started yesterday.
Yeah.
Available on next Friday. The 10 was coming out, pre-ordering end of October and available early November.
Yeah, that's the only one anybody seems to care about.
Well, and that was one of my questions, too, is they announced all these cool things on the 8, and now the 10 is so much better.
Who's going to buy the 8?
Well, because it's $300 cheaper.
Well, there's that. and I'm sorry, but it's a lot of also-ran. You can already buy phones with edge-to-edge glass and glass front and back and surgical-grade steel and water and dust-resistant and wireless charging and super retina displays. I mean, it's not...
Nothing new.
It's not innovative.
Nope.
You know, they have tap to wake. I only got that. No home button. You can get that. Swipe up replaces the home button. Wow! You may have noticed that on every Android phone you've ever had.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do multitasking, again, not new. Siri, you can now speak directly to it or press the side button, very much like Google Assistant. I'm sorry, it's just, I'm glad that Apple is getting there with these things because they've really kind of been behind everybody else. But again, they played catch up, and I was really honestly hoping for something truly innovative,
a wow
again.
Factor,
and it's one of the problems that Apple has with only releasing a phone once a year.
Right,
with a dozen other Android manufacturers, you get a new Android phone every month, and the specs of the iPhone 10 are comparable to the Note 8 and the Galaxy 8, you know, the latest ones from Samsung.
Right,
and it's a high end phone like the Samsung, but they're keeping the SE, you know, the 4-year-old phone, for a $349, so they can say iPhone starting at $349,
right,
to compete with Huawei and HTC at the low end of the phone. Although I was looking at Walmart this morning, there's an Android smartphone for $19 flat price. It's only running Lollipop, so version 5, so it's a few versions old, but it's $19 for a smartphone.
That's exactly right. You could buy that as a burner phone.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I've been getting quite a few advertisements because, you know, I had the Samsung Note 7, and they're saying, replace your old phone. I'm sorry, my Google phone I consider still a lot better than the Samsung one. This thing has been great performance-wise, updating and everything else. I'm not being throttled as far as knowing when the updates come. Boom. Oreo came right away, got that updated, a lot of nice features, and I don't have all the other bloatware that Samsung and everybody else says, well, that comes with the phone.
Yep.
No, I was really
looking forward. Like I said, my phone's 2-3 years old now, 3 years, I think. But at any rate, it's a little slow, but that's all. And if I buy any new phone,
Pixel 2,
most of them don't have wireless charging. I want wireless charging. It is so ridiculously convenient.
I thought the new Pixel 2 was going to have it.
No, I don't believe it. Maybe, but I don't think
Who knows? I haven't followed up on that. But the one nice thing, though, even with the Pixel that I have now, the XL, it does charge. I could be down to, say, 12%, and I can quick throw it on the charger, and within less than an hour, I'm back up to at least 80%.
Yeah, the new iPhones have that feature too. If you use the computer charger, so the iPhone normally comes with a 5-watt charger. You can use the iPad's 12-watt charger, and it will go a little faster. But if you use the computer's 45-watt charger, it goes to 80% in half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, makes sense. You use a higher wattage charger, it charges faster. Mm-hmm. So we actually run into that in a store when people complain their iPad takes too long to charge, and find out they're using their iPhone charger. Half the wattage is, you know, more than half the time.
Right.
What we haven't seen any specs yet is how long it takes to do a full charge with wireless charging. From everything I've read, it's not as efficient as a direct charger. But if you set it on your nightstand and let it charge overnight, that's probably going to be long enough.
Right.
And you can plug it in for, you know, quick charges if you want to.
Right. It doesn't. Nobody really knows, of course, because Pixel 2 isn't out yet, but I'm not seeing anything about that wireless charging, which is too bad, which is too doggone bad. Then they did this whole big thing on the... Oh, we got to take a break. And we've got people on the line. We'll take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, Mark from Greece, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Mark from Greece, who's patiently waiting on the line. What's up, Mark?
Hey.
I'm sorry, start again. I missed some of what you said there.
I said, hi, guys. How are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I got two new toys this week.
Ooh, what'd you get?
One that cost me and one that didn't really cost me. One was, as I finally picked up my computer that was built.
Nice.
Love it.
Good.
Love it. Love how it, well, you know, it slowed down a little bit after I bought it. It booted in 15 seconds, and after I loaded my programs, it booted in 20 seconds.
Oh, throw it away.
So, you know.
I'll take it off your hands just so you don't have to deal with it.
It's not as fun anymore, you know.
Right.
But, yes, I can recommend to anybody, get a solid-state drive to boot from if you can. It's awesome.
Yep.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Second of all, you talked about the 4K TVs.
Yep.
Well, recently I had to use my Geek Squad protection, and they replaced it because my Samsung TV, the panel went on it, and they couldn't get it. So they were, you know, they replaced it.
Nice.
And I ended up with an LG 4K.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, I love it. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at it this way. We're so used to watching film rate at 24 frames per second.
Right.
And it looks like a film. And we watch everything in real life. And, you know, everything else that I look at looks like it's supposed to. And movies kind of look grainy and kind of flat and not a lot of definition. And this just kind of puts things the way your eyes see it.
Nice.
And people aren't used to seeing movies and TV shows that way.
Right.
And they're used to a low frame rate.
Yeah, and a lot of the new TVs, in fact, new for the last couple of years, are running at 120 hertz refresh rate minimum, right, instead of the early 60. When I got my HDTV a couple of years ago, it took a little bit of getting used to because things look too real.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And now when I switch back to SD or 60, a 60-frame movie comes on, it's horrible.
Yep. Yeah.
And you almost can't buy a TV that isn't 4K these days. Even tiny ones are
right,
4K.
Right, right.
So it's yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah.
And the one thing Apple did say is they've been working with the movie studios so that if the 4K movie content on the iTunes store is going to be the same price as HD, which is good, and if you already bought an HD movie from the iTunes store, you're going to get the 4K for free, which is really good.
That's
and they're going to work with Netflix to make sure the 4K Netflix content can stream to the 4K Apple TV. So Netflix is one of the only places where you can get 4K content
right
these days.
Well, all I can recommend to people is if you don't want the super, super realistic picture, get a 60 hertz panel in a 4K.
Right.
And, you know, you're going to get a little motion blur, but those panels have those artificial boosting frame rate things,
right,
that interpolate. And, you know, you can get a little bit of the blur out with that. And it does make the picture pop more. But you can still get a 60 hertz 4K TV at a reasonable price.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, you don't have to get the 120 hertz TV.
Right.
And that's going to, you know, it's still going to have a lot of resolution to it. But, it, like I said, it looks more like when I look out the window and I see everything, you know, that's the way the TV looks, the same as my eyes see.
Right, yep. Right, right.
And, you know, this is like people go to the movie theater and they go to when they have movies that are shown at the higher frame rate. People freak out.
We went to see The Hobbit at 48 frame HDR, and it was weird because it didn't look like a movie. It looked like a window,
yeah.
And that was the big criticism at the time. It looked too real.
Yeah, the clarity is so sharp.
Yeah,
you will get used to it.
Yeah,
after a while, you like you said, you're going to go to something that is either 30 frames or 20 frame or 60 frames, and you're going to go, oh, this doesn't look as good.
Right.
Yep.
So, well, like I said, I've had a number of people tell me they don't like, they've got 4K TVs and they don't like them because they're too sharp. And in each case, I remind them that they hated HD when it first came out, too.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
No, I love the 4K, my 4K.
Yeah.
I mean, like you say, the clarity is so crisp and everything else. You just appreciate it that much more that the lines and definition is so much better.
I'm a fan, so I just wanted to
give you that.
Excellent.
Thanks,
all right, thanks, Mark.
Have a good day.
Have fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, like I said, you know, it's you get used to it, right? It's like anything new. Too sharp, too crisp, too clear. Not sure that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Too crisp? I'd like to be crisp and clear and clean and look like a window. But
and most,
like I said, people hated HD when it first came out for the same reason.
And most people don't want to have to buy a whole new TV again because they just did. We went through the analog to digital transition, then the SD to HD transition. But what we've also seen is TVs don't last as long anymore. You know, when I was a kid, we bought a TV.
Don't.
It lasted for 20 years. Now your TV, you might get 5 years out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you buy your next one, it's going to have all those latest whiz-bang features, probably for less than what you paid. In fact, I waited. I got a 55-inch TV for Father's Day 2 years ago.
Nice.
It was $500.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking at a 60-inch 4K for $500.
Yeah. Yeah.
Darn. I want it to be cheaper than that, but I want the special features too.
I just, my monitor at home has a band that's starting to sparkle a little bit down the left side near the over a little bit. So it's going to be time to replace that monitor pretty soon. And I was really angry until I realized it's almost 20 years old.
Yeah.
Well, like I was telling you,
so it might be time.
My computer, that was starting to, you know, slow down on me, reboots, and then it gets stuck at the BIOS screen. And I'm thinking, yeah, I started thinking, wait, this thing's got to be at least 9-10 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ordered another box because this thing doesn't owe me a cent.
No, no kidding, exactly.
But, you know, you hate the thought of having to deal with doing everything.
And right.
Yeah.
All right.
At least they're not as heavy as the CRTs were to get rid of.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
70 pounds. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Frank from Greece, New York. Hi, Frank. What's up?
I have a Mac problem.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm using Apple Mail as a client and Time Warner as a server. And the problem I've got is that it takes forever to, when I query the server, it takes forever to download anything. And sometimes it gives me no new messages. And I query the thing again by hitting the little envelope. And then I get 14, 15 messages right after it told me there wasn't any. And the sending is the same way, where it takes forever to get the outgoing. In fact, it never goes out. It goes into the draft folder. And then it sends it whenever it feels like it, I guess, down the line. So things are really slow. So I called Apple and asked them what's wrong, and they told me that my RAM was full. I have a 16 gigabyte RAM, and he had me reset the RAM, and sure enough, it opened up some room there. But the next day, it was full again. You look at the activity monitor, and it tells me I got 16 gigabytes of RAM. Memory use is just 13, and cache files is the difference. So it's full up, it seems.
Well, the RAM is always full. Every program running takes all the RAM it can.
Right. If you've got 8 gig, it will always be full. If you've got 16, it will always be full. If you've got 32, it will always be full. It uses that space for buffers.
You want to look at the CPU usage in Activity Monitor to see if there's a program using too much of your CPU power. But before that, back to mail, what operating system are you under?
Well, it's the latest that Apple offers.
10.12, okay.
Yeah.
There are some new features that Apple has implemented that cause problems with older services, especially in mail. There are new security settings in the mail program, and Time Warner doesn't offer the latest in mail security. So quite frequently, you have to go into your mail settings and turn on a checkbox that says allow insecure authentication. And so what happens is when your computer tries to talk to the mail server, it will try to do it over an encrypted channel for security. Time Warner doesn't offer encrypted authentication, so you have to turn that allow insecure authentication on for both the sending server and the receiving server, and we found that to be an issue we're seeing now with 10.12 and Time Warner servers. The other thing that we sometimes see is too many incorrect passwords saved in your keychain. If there's a hiccup, for want of a better word, and in getting your mail, quite often it will say, please enter your password. And it doesn't always mean your password was wrong. It just means it couldn't connect, and please enter your password again. So you type in another password, and you've now got two passwords might be saved in your keychain. So if you go into your keychain and delete all of the extra passwords for Time Warner's IMAP and SMTP setting, so you only have one of each, one for IMAP, one for SMTP, and it's the current correct password, that can also help too. Because if there's too many passwords saved, Time Warner will try this, the mail app will try logging in with the first one, then the second one, then the third one, then the fourth one, then the fifth one, then the sixth one works. And that can delay it as well.
I see. You said IMAP and POP, IMAP, I guess. Which do I have? How do I find out?
That would be a question. IMAP or POP are incoming servers, and SMTP is the outgoing server. And you would find that in your in mail under the account setup, whether it's IMAP or POP.
Okay.
Basically, IMAP stores your mail on the server, so it synchronizes with all your other devices, which is what most people want.
No.
So you delete a message on your phone, it gets deleted from your computer, too. POP is the older standard where it downloads everything to your computer and then ignores anything else.
Do I have a choice with that, or do I have to wait for Time Warner to do something?
You have a choice. You choose what you want to use when you set up the account on settings in your computer.
Oh, okay. So I can go back and do that.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, something will work. Thank you.
Thanks.
The other issue we've often seen is people try using webmail.
Yeah.
Time Warner's webmail is god-awful slow.
It really is.
And we think partly because they don't want to offer mail service. And we're seeing some ISPs don't even offer mail service at all,
right?
Because Google is free,
right?
So we don't want to have to bother holding servers and passing mail and running into that problem. So we'll give you internet. You go somewhere else for your mail.
Frankly, Google does it. Oh, the Greenlight is like that. Google does it better than most anybody. And so why not go there or Apple or Microsoft or whoever and they don't need to do that.
And in most cases, we recommend you do not use your ISP's mail service because it makes it really hard to switch ISPs because your email address is the old address. So you have to tell everyone your new address. It's worse than physically moving because you can tell one post office and all of your mail gets forwarded. Well, with your email, you have to tell everyone, including that magazine subscription you once a year that goes to your old address.
I logged into something I haven't logged into for a while because it's been running fine, and I was shocked that the address it was using I still had. It still worked, the email address.
No, that's one thing, switching to the new computer, that's what I love. I don't have to worry about any of my emails, my folders, anything else. I just log into Gmail.
Right.
It's there.
And it's all up there on their
contacts,
servers.
Everything else, and I don't have to worry about a darn thing there. Same with documents and everything else. Photos, they're already up on Gmail. So it's just some other programs that I have to back up that I got to do. But otherwise, if it had been like the old days, backing up all your old emails and everything else, the folders.
It takes days to move to a new machine.
Yeah. Nightmare.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hello. I'm trying to back up my iPad Pro to my computer. And that part was done. I wanted to transfer purchases, my iPad Pro, to the hard drive. And I get a dialogue saying, attempting to copy to a disk, Macintosh hard drive failed. The required folder cannot be found.
I have seen that in a couple of times. Usually happens after we erase a hard drive and reinstall things. There's a folder missing from your home folder.
I'm sorry, you probably said this and I just missed it. Are you on a Mac or a PC?
Mac.
Okay. Thank you.
iTunes Media folder. So in your home folder, there's a music folder and unable to get request. Okay, so the answer to the question can't be found either.
Okay, excellent.
There's a folder called iTunes Media. And okay. that's where iTunes stores all of its stuff.
Inside the music folder?
Inside the music folder, yeah. And you, what may have happened is that folder got moved or renamed. And
all right.
And I'm trying to find how to bring it back and fix that problem, because we've run into it every now and then at our store, too, when we're rebuilding someone's computer. The other thing, too, is what version of iTunes are you running?
The most recent.
Okay. The most recent iTunes, they just released earlier this week, and it doesn't do apps anymore.
Okay.
It doesn't do iOS apps anymore. There were two big changes into iTunes. It doesn't do apps anymore because you do all that on your phone. People have complained over time that iTunes is getting too big and bloated and tries to do too many things. So now that Apple is removing things and moving it off to other apps, people are complaining that they removed something. So that may be the issue now, too, is that the iTunes does not back up or manage your iOS apps anymore, so there's nowhere to transfer them to because it doesn't do it anymore. So it basically relies on your Apple ID account information to know what apps you want to re-download. So any app you've ever downloaded, you can always download again. And they've basically gone to that sort of model where your apps don't get backed up on the computer. Because they didn't do any good on the computer anyway. They just took up space and couldn't do anything.
Right.
So you might look in the iTunes window, there is no section for apps anymore because it doesn't do iOS apps. So that may be the message that you're getting. Also, they can't find the folder because it doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
So when you back up your iPad, it's going to back up your settings and your photos and the list of apps that you have. So if you ever need to restore from backup, it knows the list of apps you have and will download those apps again from Apple.
Okay.
Rather than from your computer.
All right. Does it go with it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. We're going to take another quick little minute out here. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 41 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 45 minutes after the hour, we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a question about Linux. Back in the day when it was kind of a badge of honor to build your own PCs, I built a PC, built it dual boot for Linux. I'd like to put Linux again, Ubuntu, on my Mac, but I look at it now and it seems almost like it's rocket science. And of course, one of the things they suggest is to have a backup, which after dealing with Steve, I have online backup and several drives. But they also suggest using something called Carbon Copy for recovery HD volume or something. And so what I want to know is, a regular backup versus this Carbon Copy thing, is that the same thing or is something different?
Well, Carbon Copy Cloner is a backup program, but it does an image backup. You may have heard Nick and I talk about imaging a backup.
Right.
Where it images the entire disk as a single snapshot. So if there's a failure, you just bring the image back again. The Time Machine backup does a file copy and copies all your files. So it gives you the same results in the end. Some people like using Carbon Copy Cloner. Another one is Super Duper. In fact, we almost don't like Carbon Copy Cloner anymore because he went commercial. Don't
right.
blame him for doing that, but he went commercial. You have to pay for it. Super Duper is free. You only pay for it if you want to schedule your backups.
Mm-hmm.
And that will basically give you a clone of your hard drive on another hard drive, so you can boot that other hard drive in an emergency. So if your main drive crashes, you can boot the other drive, finish your work until you have time to fix your first drive. Apple's Disk Utility does that already, built into the OS, but it's just one of those features no one knows about.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And you do that one by hand?
Yeah, you pick your source, you pick your target, and click on image, and it makes an image for you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so it's just having a backup copy at all is good. Because if something goes wrong during the Linux installation, you can screw everything. We've had a couple of people doing a boot camp installation on the Mac to put Windows on it, and they'll miss the empty partition to install onto and install Windows on top of their Mac partition. And then suddenly they have a Windows-only computer and erased all their Mac stuff.
Right.
So it's you have to make sure you pick the right partition when you're installing.
Right. The nice thing about most Linux systems these days, if you start with a new one like 16, which is the latest, right, 16.4 at this point, although 16.10 is next month, what you end up with is a thing that actually understands a lot of the new stuff like UEFI, which is has replaced, yes, essentially the BIOS.
And that's what the Mac uses, so you have to make sure your Linux supports that.
And UEFI, if you need to know this, stands for Unified Extensible Firmware Interface. And it's essentially the new name for the BIOS. It's a new version of the BIOS. And if you're using an older version of Ubuntu, then yeah, it's rocket science and you don't know enough to do it, frankly. But if you have the latest version, for example, at one point I did that on an old Mac I have, and it came up and said, "Oh, you've already got an operating system on here. It runs UEFI. Do you want to replace it or add to it?" And I said, "Well, I want to do dual boot." It said, "Okay," and it did it, and it let me pick the size, you know, resize the partitions for me. So I gave, obviously, less to the Windows side, the Mac side, because the Mac had the whole thing, and put Linux on the other half. So that was that worked actually quite easily and quite nicely.
Okay. Well, I went to a site called LifeWire. And they do seem to have a whole how-to do it, if you will. But gosh,
one I just posted.
So okay, it made it look a little difficult. And while I'm not completely ignorant, you know, I don't want to screw my machine up and then have to bring it to Steve and be chastised. So
that's why you have a backup, just in case you screw it up.
Well, okay, so I took that light chastisement. I got backups on everything now, so and they're all current. So I just need to make certain I have the latest version of Ubuntu, I guess, and then I think I'm going to go for it.
Go for it.
All right, and then one last word. It looks like Malwarebytes for PC, now on Mac, you can actually, there's a viable, you know, false version.
There's a pay version that runs in the background scanning all the time. The free version is a scan on demand.
I don't know if I want to pay. I don't know.
You don't have to, although annoyingly, when you download the free version, they include a trial of the pay version.
Right. I got
hoping
that.
It
keeps including a trial of the
So they hope they hope you're going to like it and then pay for it at the end. So you can't download the free-only version. You just have to ignore all the trial reminders that your trial is up
and
pay them.
Okay. Well, you have answered my question as usual. Thank you, guys, and have a good day.
Thanks. You too. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
And so if he wants to get truly crazy, he can boot into the command line only on the Mac, because it's Unix underneath that Linux is also based on.
Right.
Just everything at the command line.
Matt, where are you calling from?
I would do that. I would have no problem doing that, actually.
And you can install X Windows, which was, you know, the original windowing operating system for Unix clients. So,
that still works. It's it's the heart of
Apple stopped distributing X11 themselves, but the Quartz project is doing X Windows for Mac. So if you still want to do X Windows on your Mac, you can.
Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Buffalo, New York.
Hey, what's going on, Nick Francesco?
Everything is good, Matt. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. I got a question. I saw this advertisement for a Google Chromebook Plus, and it looks like a tablet. You can flip it around. I want to know your opinions about it, and I want to know what you think about it.
Well, there are a couple of versions out there, one from Asus and a couple of other places as well. And
Samsung was the one. It was
Samsung makes
for.
One as well. Yep, yep, yep. And it's actually a very good idea. I am a Chromebook fanatic. I admit that.
I know you are. That's why I got to ask your advice.
Right. I don't have the flippable one yet, and that's only let's call it a monetary decision. But I love the idea. Once Apple comes out with once Android comes out with Android apps on Chrome, which they've been promising us for, I think, 11 years now, once that comes out, you'll be able to use that like a tablet because it has a touchscreen. If it's the flippable one, it has a touchscreen.
Yes, it said in the advertisement it comes with a pen, too, like a stylus pen.
Yep, yep. So you can use it... You can do all kinds of things with it. You can flip it around all the way, or you can tent it up like a tent. Tent, I guess, like a thing you tent. It looks like a pretty nifty machine, and not terribly expensive as these things go, because it does have a full touch screen and everything else. So, it's not the $150 Chromebook, but that's because of the touch screen and all the other stuff. And I think it looks like a heck of a product, and you'll be poised for the day when Google finally releases Android apps to Chrome.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm trying to think they're doing. But bottom line, at the end of the day, do you think buying one of those would be a good investment? Because I'm in the laptop market right now.
I think it will. Well, again, what do you do with your computer in general? Can you work with a Chromebook? Because Chromebooks do things differently. You know, you're using Google Drive, their Google Docs and Google Sheets and that stuff instead of... Microsoft Office or LibreOffice or anything else. And there are some programs, of course, you can't run on a Chromebook because they're Windows only or whatever. And so you need to know whether or not a Chromebook will work for you because it is not a Windows computer.
But understood. Once... I appreciate your advice, my man.
All right. Thank you, sir. Keep smiling. And that's very true of Chromebooks. They do everything you want to do, but they're going to do them differently. It's like switching from a PC to a Mac. You can do everything you used to do. You just do it with different apps.
Yep.
And the same thing is true of a Chromebook. You do everything you used to do. You just do them with different apps. And so that's the sort of thing that you have to be aware of. And get used to using. All right, back to the phones. We got a couple minutes for Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Nick. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Quick question. Got a problem that's just been kind of bugging me for a while, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. I have an AC1900 Linksys router. Got both printers hooked to it through the Ethernet, and... 4 terabyte hard drive hooked to the USB on it. Kind of setting up the whole house network kind of thing. Both Windows computers hooked to it just fine. See both printers, see the drive. One's my desktop box. It's on the Ethernet cable. The other one's my wife's HP Envy, so it goes in wirelessly. Add the Chromebook into it. And the Chromebook, I put in the page. It sees both networks because there's a 2.4 and a 5.0 megahertz. Mm-hmm. It sees the network. You put in the password. I can connect through both 2.4 and 5.0 on the Chromebook. Will not see either printer or the hard drive.
Well, here's the thing. First, in terms of the printers, Chromebooks use something called cloud printing from Microsoft. So
Google.
From Google. Cheese and crackers.
Terrible today.
Getting confused.
It's Irma. You know, we're getting very little weather as such, but my sinuses are just packed. I can't see straight. I can't think straight. All right, so the Chromebook uses cloud printing, and so that needs to be set up. Most new printers can do that, but you have to set them up to do that. And once you set them up to do that, the Chromebook will find them just fine. Now, as far as talking to external hard drives, if you cannot directly see it through the files app, then you you probably are not running SMB. And if you were to go into the Chrome store and type SMB, System Message Block, SMB, in the search box, you will find a little ways down the list something called File System for Windows. And it lets you access any shared Windows folders directly from the Files app.
Okay. So I need to go in. Now, you said there's a Files app that I should be running?
Well, there is one built in. Yes, absolutely.
And so I got to go find that one.
Find the Files app and tell it to look on the network for a hard drive.
Right. And if it still doesn't see it, you might. Well, there's actually two. One is called Network File Share for Chrome OS. And that is by Google. So maybe that's the one you want to run. But what that lets you do is mount a regular SMB file share, which is the geeky name for a system from a file that's a system that's been shared to the network that Windows machines can see. It's SMB stands for System Message Block, and it's how it's one of the methods to share a directory to the network.
Okay, so. Sounds like first thing I got to do, because I've seen the...
All right, Andy, I'm sorry, but we got to go. I'm sorry. I apologize. That music tells me that you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but you're going to get another chance to do it again. So stay tuned. Don't go much of anywhere. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Andy's going to have to listen to the... podcast to rewrite down what we said. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we have Craig from Brighton, New York on the line. Hi, Craig. What's up?
Hi. So I've got a problem troubleshooting internet speed in my house.
Uh-huh.
This is I think my problem is my router. I want you to confirm my logic and maybe give me some advice on what to do if I upgrade.
Sure.
So what I have is I've got a cable modem, cable from Spectrum, going through a decent... cable modem. It's a Aeris Soundboard 6121.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be able to handle more than 100 megabytes. And when I connect straight from the modem to my computer, I get 25 megabytes per second, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Then I, for my house, I run from the modem to a Linksys router. It's an EA4500. It's an N generation. And even if I strip off, turn off the wireless and just run a single computer out of that, I only get 6 to 7 megabytes per second. The firmware on both the router and on the Motorola is up to date. And so my question is twofold. One, is inherently going to be a speed drop when I go from my cable modem to any router, even if it's only a distributed one? Or is it time to spend more money on a new router?
Well, yes and no. There will always be a speed drop, but it should be fairly infinitesimal.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I have Greenlight, and I go from their router to my router, and I really, unless I'm getting significantly more than I'm paying for, it doesn't drop at all.
Uh-huh.
And theoretically, you shouldn't. Yes, will there be a drop? Yes.
But
it's something
be half
that
the bandwidth.
Right. It's a network guy would notice it because he would be able to measure it. but you shouldn't notice it, and it really shouldn't be. It should be fairly infinitesimal. Okay. So if you're getting a drop from, would you say, 60 to 6?
I'm getting from dropping from 25 to 7.
25 to 7? That's way too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, the first thing to do is to check your not cable router, the one that you've got in there.
And make sure you're not running a 10 megabit Ethernet wire between the cable router and the
right, and the
Linksys router.
Ah.
So it has a gigabit port on it, but if you're only running a two pair, or, you know, 10 megabit wire, you're going to get 10 maximum.
So if you've got Cat 5, maybe replace it with Cat 6.
It is Cat 5.
There you go. So go to your favorite big box, kind of store, and grab a couple of Cat 6 cables and see if that solves your problem immediately.
Okay. And so then if that does, then I should probably also think about the so basically that Cat 5 is going to top out at 10 to any device it's hooked up to.
That you should top out fairly close to what you're paying for, in terms of 25 or whatever it is. You should be able to get real close to that. You know,
okay.
if you end up with 24, do a dance.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So yeah. Well, that cable's a lot cheaper than a $300 router. Yeah.
There is that. Certainly, the place to start. At the most, you're out a few bucks.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How old is your router?
I think it's 3 years old. It still sells it, but I think it's toward the end of it.
Getting to be the time where it could be wearing out. You know, your router is one of those things that's on all the time.
Yeah,
probably under the desk gathering dust.
Yeah.
Although it's not under the desk, dust is a great insulator.
Yep.
So every once in a while, dust your modem so that it doesn't build up heat, because that'll kill it faster than anything.
Turn it off and let it rest overnight.
I have a pretty good ventilator, so I'd say.
Good.
Before I let you go, I do have a question, though. So at some point, I will need to replace the router, and I'm looking at Linksys. N is their lowest. Then they talk about EA, and then they talk about this MIFO or something technology. Do you have any comment on should I go to middle edge or cutting edge if I upgrade the router?
It really doesn't matter. Your computer is only going to do as fast as its wireless connection anyway.
And a lot can depend on how big your house is and what the walls are made of.
Yeah.
So after N, the current wireless standard is AC.
Yeah.
And it has a MIMO, multiple in, multiple out.
It
has multiple antennas.
That's the MIMO thing.
Yeah. And so that's a central wireless router that broadcasts a strong radio signal. It's a stronger signal, faster signal than N.
Uh-huh.
But if you're trying to cover a larger house or your router's at one end of the house and you want to get to something at the other end of the house, having an AC may not work. And so the new technology coming out is called mesh.
I've seen that, yeah.
And instead of having one giant router, you have several smaller routers scattered around your house. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's more expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
Google has that, and I'm considering it because, as I've said many times, my wife cannot get Laughly at the pond.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Question, though, your Spectrum modem, how old is that? Is that a...
The modem's okay. Actually, the Spectrum problem they looked at, they said it's fine. And
is it a newer one?
It's spec'd out to handle 137 megabytes per second.
Yeah, and he said if you connected in directly to it, he got full speed.
Yeah, I got a little more than I was paying for, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to buy a cable, and maybe life will be good.
Yeah, maybe it will. And like I said, if not, you're out a few bucks.
Yeah, and if not, then I think about one of these...
mesh routers.
Okay, well, thank you, gentlemen. It's very helpful, and I enjoy your show.
Yep, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
We've had a couple of people try the Google Wi-Fi router, and it didn't work as well as the AC router they had. They expected it to be better, especially with the three-pack. You scatter it around the house.
Interesting.
And it's, three of the Google Wi-Fi routers is about the cost of one AC router.
Right.
So that was sort of the idea in the early days, is you had your one router, and then you put repeaters everywhere, which is basically what the new mesh network is. So you've got
Pretty
three or four boxes that all mesh together and pick up and repeat the wireless signal, especially if you have a larger house or you have metal construction in the walls, you know, aluminum joists instead of wood.
Right.
Or you're trying to get past the kitchen or bathroom, which is full of metal.
Yeah.
Or like me, you have one curved wall that's got chicken mesh in it.
Chicken wire in it, yeah.
Yeah, your house is like mine, 1927.
My library is a Faraday cage. That's the way it's always going to be.
Yep. What would be really good is if the wireless router was in the exact center of the house, but as typical, the wiring people put it on an outside wall because that's where the wire is.
Right.
So,
interestingly,
from the outside wall to the other end of the outside wall is terrible.
Mine is in the center of my house, but it's in the center of the house, not in the center of the property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's where my wife has the problem. Yeah. Where she's fine.
No, she doesn't have the problem.
I've got the problem.
You have the problem.
I've got the problem.
You have the issue. You got to solve it. You're the computer guy.
Right. Anywhere from the porch to the driveway to the very back of the kitchen, all of that is covered, except for the library, is covered lovely. Lovely. Yeah. But where she wants to be, out by the pond, is not covered. All right. So I put up I had an old relay system that I hadn't been using. So I stuck that in one of the windows in the back of the house. And it helped. It helped significantly. So she's less unhappy. Let's put it that way.
Get a cantenna.
I should get a cantenna. Call Fred and get a cantenna set up. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. What's up, Bodan?
Hey, guys. Let's just talk about ISPs, Internet Service Providers, for the Rochester market.
Sure.
With the merging of Time Warner with Spectrum, there's not much competition out there. Either it's the phone company and DSL or Spectrum. And at least Time Warner was willing to either negotiate or play a little game. If you threatened to leave them to a competitor, they would give you another promotional rate for 12 months. That kept it, in my opinion, a little more in reality. Sounds like what I've been hearing is that Spectrum isn't quite willing to do that.
No, well, Spectrum, and, don't forget, is actually Charter Communications.
Okay.
Which was worse than Time Warner.
Which is worse. Which is a horrible company.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, I was on a Time Warner promotional rate of about $35 per month, and my speed was 15 down, and I think either one or two up. Charter did give me a little bit of a free upgrade, and I'm now getting 20 down, two up, but my rate went up from $35 to $60 a month, and I was actually considering switching to the phone company. But on the other hand, I don't know. It's just when I called the Spectrum, they are not willing to do anything to keep their customers.
No, right. They don't care. They're not interested in that. You forgot Greenlight, of course. Greenlight isn't everywhere in Rochester, but it is around.
And there is satellite, but that can get expensive because that's metered like your cell phone. And the cellular internet, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But what we've been seeing is, especially if you look at Spectrum's website, you know, they've got that 60 meg internet for $30 a month for new customers. And there aren't any new customers anymore.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating.
Well, yeah, because I try to play the game with them, and they said, well, you must leave us for 30 days. So, you know, I would have to leave it, and if I did it for less, like a week or so, they would not be able to give me any promotional rate.
Yeah. One thing we were talking about this before the show. One thing I just thought of is have your wife call. Say you're separated, and she's putting all the bills in her name, and she's a new customer.
They may say, well, it's the same address or something like that. I don't know.
Well, it's a new tenant. And okay. It's the same address.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Whatever. But have you guys heard anything about is Charter/Spectrum? Are they willing to retain customers if you say, "Hey, I'm going to listen"?
No, because they know you're no, right. No, they don't care.
Yeah, we have heard that they do not do that type of negotiation like Time Warner did.
It is what it is, and matter of fact, a lot of them you can get. They don't bind you to a contract on a lot of them.
That's their big thing is they don't have a contract, and they know there's nowhere else to go because you know you go to the phone company, you're lucky to get six or eight. And if you want faster than that, you have to get two phone lines and bond them together. So now you got 16. You know, if you want to get even close to what Spectrum is offering, you need six phone lines.
Six phone lines, easy,
and,
maybe
and bond
10.
It together. Yeah.
So or now, let me ask you this. If they're charging me $60 and I'm getting 20 down, two up, But here's the other thing. My modem, which I do own, that's the max the speed that it will handle. If I say, listen, I don't mind paying the 60, give me one of your modems for rent, and then jack up my speed.
We have also heard that Spectrum doesn't charge rent on their modems.
Correct.
But we've also seen customers' bills where they are getting charged rent on their modems.
Well, I do have my own router, too. I'm sorry, my Wi-Fi router. So I own my two pieces of gadgets. They are two separate instruments here in my house. So, you know, I just wanted to see what kind of feedback you have gotten from your customers. And
They don't charge you for the modem, but they will charge you if you want a wireless modem.
That's right. I don't need it because I do have my own Wi-Fi router, so I don't need that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you want to keep up to date on what's happening in the telecom industry, a local author, Phil Dampier at StopTheCap.com, tries to keep up with that and all the latest stuff.
Repeat that website again,
Stop please? The Cap.
Stop the Cap, right. CAP.com. Huh?
Yep, they started out when Frontier was threatening to put a 5-gigabyte cap on internet services. And in fact, their top story now is that New York State Public Service Commission has announced a $13 million settlement with Charter because Charter has failed to build out the cable network in the rural areas. And so now if you live in a rural area, apparently Charter is going to.
And you might, Dan, you might also want to check, go to the Greenlight Network's website and sign up there.
GreenNet. Okay. I'll
Greenlight.
Check out.
Greenlight.
Oh, Greenlight. Greenlight. Yeah. Like, okay,
yeah, it's greenlightnetworks.com. If they're in your area for $50 a month,
you get
100 megabytes download and 20 megabytes upload.
Wow. That's like a supercharged Porsche.
And there's no fees or taxes or
no
any
contract
of that stuff.
To sign.
Now, you do pay an installation fee, a one-time installation fee of $100.
Okay.
But so what? Right? I mean, and there's no contract, and, you know, every month I get a bill for $50. That's all.
So you are on green light.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yes, I am. I'm the only one here in this building at the moment. They're not everywhere yet. They're planning.
I'm in the northwest quadrant of Rochester.
Yeah, who knows? But their website, what you do is they've got a right at the thing, and I've argued
it's right on
the
front page now. Check availability.
It says check availability. It used to say sign up for service or something, and nobody did because nobody is going to sign up for something they don't know if they can get. But now they've just changed the name, which it always only checked for availability. But now you can do that. So you can put in your address.
I will do that, gentlemen. Hey, by the way, this was a great week. I got my annual correspondence from Rob Linton and Jazz 90.1.
Yes.
And I will be renewing my membership proudly.
That's what I love to hear. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to each of you to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by the Rochester Area Community Foundation. More information can be found at racf.org.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Steve from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Steve.
Hello, guys. Good afternoon. One question I'm sure will be quick. The other one, I don't know. I finally talked to a friend of mine to put in Linux on his XP machine that took 45 minutes to boot. And I'm very careful when I do these things, especially for someone else, to write down passwords.
Yeah.
I only use 2 on the installation. There are actually 2 that he knows very well. But when I try to log in as administrator to do anything, it says the passwords I put in aren't valid.
Well, when you say you're logging in as administrator, how are you doing that?
I'm not familiar with the terms. Basically, I go down if I want to update. Say I just want to update the files that you have to sign in, or you get you log in and it does the updates for you.
Right.
I've only used, as I say, two passwords. That's it.
Okay, here's the deal. In most Linuxes, now what version of Linux did you put on?
Linux Mint. Cinnamon.
Okay, I don't know that one as well. But in most versions of Linux, you don't really use the root account anymore. The regular users are added to what's called the sudo account, S-U-D-U-D-O, S-U-D-O, sudo. And what you, which I always thought was pronounced sudo, but everybody tells me it's sudo. I don't know.
Super user do.
Yes,
you're
exactly.
You're doing, and I, yeah, so right. I always did sudo.
Right.
You know if you're sudo or sudo, you know.
I did it as sudo because you're sudo the root now.
P-S-E-U.
Right, right. But anyway, here's the deal. When you say, for example, sudo apt-get update, yep. Right, it'll ask you for a password. That's your password as the whatever user you're currently logged in as. It then checks in the sudo file under etsy to see if you're allowed to run root programs.
Yeah. This says password, not wrong password or something like that.
So if you're logged in as Steve, for example,
yep,
and you say sudo blah, 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 and it asks for a password, and you type in Steve's password, it still doesn't let you in?
Well, that isn't really what I've tried to do. I haven't tried to add programs that way for his machine, but I tried to do the updates. You come down
same thing. But you're logged in as Steve.
Well, it's his,
I don't care. It doesn't matter what the name is. But you're logged in as Steve.
Yep.
Who's just a regular user.
Yep.
And you say sudo apt-get update. And it asks for a password. And you put in Steve's password. Not root's password. Steve's password.
Correct.
And it still says you're bad. And what is the error message? Is it bad password?
Yes. I did find a way to supposedly reset it. And I followed that diligently. And, of course, when I went to exit, it's basically it goes into the text and changes the password. You get to set it.
Right.
When I exited, instead of just exiting like the video said, I got a 2-3-4-2-1-1-4-1-8 kernel panic. I says, okay, something's going on here. He can't update his computer. He can't add any programs.
Okay.
To be perfectly honest with you, I admit that I reinstalled it a second time to make sure I didn't screw up. So I wasted a lot of time there.
Okay, there is, well, can you, I don't, like I said, I don't use Mint. Can you log in as root?
I don't know that.
If you can log in as root, you can try adding the other user to the sudoer file.
Okay, when I put this together. I just all put it together like it was his. I didn't use any of my information. I used only his. So okay. He is the only user on the machine.
And you've tried... Well, wait, okay. So the first user you create, is it an admin or is it standard?
Well, in most Linuxes nowadays, it's a standard user but because it to save you from doing something stupid,
right.
Which every human does.
Yep.
You run as a regular user, but if you want to do a root thing... You say sudo this thing.
Did you?
And then it asks for your password,
yeah.
Not a root password
right.
Or anybody else's password.
And did you try the other password just to see if?
Yeah, oh yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. I've tried them both.
I don't think it isn't anything silly like the caps lock key is on.
No, very very. As I said, I write these things down, and when I'm putting in passwords for the first time, I am very very careful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's very odd.
Yeah, so what you're saying is sudo is not working for Mint. That's interesting.
Well,
what's interesting is I'm seeing that there are any number of people who are having the same problem, which is pretty
yep.
interesting.
And it goes back a long way, too.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, here's some things that you can apparently try. You're right, this goes on for a long time. Here's something fairly new from 2016, so that's helpful. Steve's going to post this. It's from the Linux Mint forums, and it says sudo's not working and user is not allowed to execute his root, and it's tagged as solved, so it should solve the problem. It's not something I can explain over the phone because it's multi-page.
Right, I understand that. Now, I am not going into the, I don't know what you call it, the black screen where you type all that
stuff. The terminal.
In the lower right corner of the mid screen, there's an update button.
Right.
And if I click that, you get to pick what you want to update, and when you go to execute it, it asks for the password.
Right, and it should be the password of the user who's currently logged in.
And the only two passwords, I've used them both. I'll obviously look at your forum and follow that. It's I just basically gave it to him and said, you just can't add anything. Use it.
Well, yeah. But yeah, everybody wants to update, and you should, because one of the things that's nice about Linux is it updates regularly and fast. So if there is an exploit, it doesn't wait till the second Tuesday of the month.
Yeah.
I picked at random. Let's see if we can solve it with this page. It's clearly not tremendously easy, but it's not tremendously short.
Right.
It'll be a little tedious, but I don't think it'll be terribly difficult to do.
I can do step by step.
Yep.
Give me step by step, I'll do it.
Yep, there you go.
Before you go, I somehow have AdAware on my Android phone. Can you suggest a app to
Lookout?
Work out?
Lookout.
Lookout, okay.
As in, look out!
Where?
Right.
Python!
Lookout is an app that does any number of things, including check all of your stuff for malware and everything else. And I've been using it since the day it came out on over numerous phones, and it really works very, very nicely.
I appreciate it, guys. You guys work every penny they pay you.
That's exactly right. And Ray told me that he was going to double my salary.
Now, that's nice.
That's nice. Thanks.
Very good, Nick. Congratulations.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, guys.
And double nothing is still nothing, but I get double nothing. Yeah. Double. The heck with you guys. I get double what you get paid. Double. That's right.
And I'm older than you.
And you are older than me, which means you're even more decrepit than I am. I'm so sorry to hear that about you. But yes, theoretically, one of the nice things about Linux is that it does update all the time, and it's short updates. It's little. If there's a problem, they immediately fix it. That's not a question. There's no,
you should,
let's wait till the second Tuesday of next month and blah, blah, blah.
You should the guy that finds it. The person that finds it fixes it and then says, I found this and here's the fix.
Right.
At the same time.
And then, but then it gets vetted by the Linux people, the main Linux team, and then it gets pushed out to all their people. But it still happens within 24 hours.
Yep.
You know, I've had updates where I do the update and then I read that there was a problem and I should update. Well, I just did. It's done. It's a done thing. And that's one of the lovely things about Linux. And also that unless you're actually updating the kernel itself, you do not reboot.
Hmm.
That's a beautiful thing. Microsoft just announced that recently and made it like it was a big deal.
Hmm. Especially Windows, where you have to reboot every day. In fact, I was setting up a new Windows machine for a customer that wants to run a specific Windows program. What is it, 187 updates to install on the first round. It had to reboot three times.
Yep.
And I said, just use a Mac version. Well, there's no Mac version of this specific program.
Right.
But there's 50 Mac versions of a similar program.
Right. Well, and that's the thing I was talking about earlier about the Chromebook.
With Chrome, too, yeah.
With Macs.
I can't run Photoshop.
Right. Why don't you run the GIMP? It's free, and yeah. it does everything Photoshop does.
Yep. And there's plenty of things.
It does 99.999% of what Photoshop
and
does.
And you can also go up to the store, and they've got so many other right. apps up there that through the Google store that you can get to do things.
Well, and on the GIMP, I have a friend, not the GIMP, on a Chromebook, I have a friend that, GIMP, by the way, stands for Google Image Graphical Image Manipulation Program. I just should go
home now.
Did you
have too much coffee or not enough coffee?
Exactly. It's only one of the two right there. Even on the Chromebook, he edits audio, he edits video, he edits pictures. All on his little Chromebook, and it all works perfectly.
Yep.
So
it's just amazing what you can do in what is basically a web browser.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very cool. All right, our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. What's up, Pat?
Well, guys, I've got a question running the Security Tango.
Okay.
And I'm hoping it's a simple situation. When I try to put this in safe mode, I get a message on the screen, this app can't open, tips can't be opened using the built-in administrator, sign in with a different account and try again. And then when I try to run any of the programs, you know, from the Security Tango, you just click on it and it almost ignores it.
What version of Windows are you running?
10.
Everything works in 10.
Yeah, and I did the same reboot on my wife's computer, who also runs Windows 10, and I get the same message. It says that what I just read to you. But other versions, I've never had any problem. Go right into safe mode, you know, click on the... I put in a Security Tango folder.
Yeah.
And I go to the folder and click on, you know, start with the RTL and all the other ones.
Are you doing safe mode or safe mode with networking? Or doesn't Windows 10 differentiate that anymore?
It didn't seem to offer that option, just safe mode.
Yeah.
Maybe it's too safe?
I don't know if, I don't remember if, I could have sworn that I changed the Tango to say...
Because we have seen that some programs won't run in safe mode because they need more resources than safe mode.
The
offers.
Instructions reference right. or yeah. indicate that some, but it doesn't it's really specific, really vague. So it says some operating systems won't run in safe mode, but right. don't worry, just continue.
Right, right.
And
so run them not
worry,
in safe
but
mode.
I didn't seem to get anywhere either.
Right, right, right. So skip the safe mode step.
Okay. Then just run it regular.
Yeah. That should work just fine. Like I said, I thought I had changed this to specifically say Windows 10 doesn't do things correctly, but I think I see here that I just made it generic, and that clearly confused yeah. you. So I'll have to
Any
fix that.
Anyway, you could take us back in time about a week so I could pick up the 2 to 3 hours I spent trying to figure out why this wasn't working.
Yeah, I apologize. I shouldn't have made it quite that vague.
You know, if you cannot work on computers, I was thinking about this with an earlier caller, and I hate to use the word waste. You should not work on computers if you're not willing to spend a lot of time and get nowhere.
Right. Right.
So, that should be it's one the of the warnings. Well, by the way, this will eat up a lot of hours of your life, and the smarter you are, the harder you're going to work, and you won't get anywhere sometimes. Too bad.
Exactly.
Well, anyway, I was hoping that basically you did. You now just saved me 2 more hours of screwing around and not getting anywhere. So, one other interesting fact.
Oh, we got to go.
That's the music. Wait. I'm sorry. But we forgot the music. I didn't even hear it underneath. It was not loud enough. Got to take a break back in just a couple of minutes. Sound Bites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Jerry from Webster, New York on the line. Speak to us, Jerry.
Hi. Good morning, or good afternoon, guys. I had a question you might be able to answer. Tried to install a Netgear router to replace my old Linksys on my desktop which is an HP, and I had the Windows 10 on it. I tried to use the for my printer, which is an HP PhotoSmart, and I put the CD in on the desktop to try and, you know, download the everything on it, and all I got was an exit message. I then went to my laptop, which was Windows 7, put the CD in, and allowed me to go to do the installation or README or exit. Would that be because the CD for the HP printer won't recognize Windows 10 or vice versa?
It's what it sounds like.
Yeah, and generally speaking, you don't want to use the CD at all on any machine because it's old. You should always go to the website and download the latest drivers
and greatest
for the right OS.
Make sure you get the Windows 10 version for that specific printer, not a generic or close enough or, you know, it starts with the same two numbers. Get the one specifically for that printer.
Yeah, like they used to have what they called universal drivers. So they'd have a universal one, say, for a desk jet. No, you want to get the actual specific make and model for Windows 10.
Right.
Oh, and HP, you can do that.
You can download them from the HP site, can you?
Yep, yep, yeah. You just
put your printer's model number in, and then it will take you right there.
The support section and just type in the model number, and it'll give you all the information.
And they'll give you the option what version of Windows you're running and actually let you select.
And a lot of times it will detect what version you're on and take you to the right place, but make sure it does.
Yeah, and make sure you get either the 32-bit or the 64-bit.
Yes. One thing I didn't mention, though, I was able to do it wired. This is a wireless router, and I did use it for the wired part for the printer. It did work, but the wireless part wouldn't work because I guess the CD is too old to install for the Windows 10.
Well, hold on now. You also have to set up the printer to talk to the router wirelessly.
If in the new router, if you use the same wireless name and same wireless password, it might automatically work. But you probably have to go back to the printer and tell it to find your wireless router again, and so you can put in the wireless password again.
Oh, well, I used the new password this time.
That's why. You'll never connect, no matter what else you do with the computer, and you'll never connect until that printer is actually attached to the network. So right now it's not talking to the network because it's got the wrong password.
Yeah, but it is working okay because I connected it wired with a wire instead of wireless.
No, right. Wire and wireless are two different connections.
Yeah,
the printer is working, yes, but it is not connecting wirelessly, which clearly is what you're trying to do. So in order to do that, you have to set the new router password in the printer in order to get it to connect wirelessly.
Okay. Would that require the new updated download from Windows 10?
Nope, that all happens in the printer.
Oh. So if I use the old Linksys password or whatever, I could probably connect it then?
Well, whatever the password is for the new Netgear router.
So you have to go to the front panel on the printer and go through the wireless setup again.
And it'll ask you for the password, and you set it up for the password that you're using for your wireless network.
Right. The printer, and we're talking about on the printer itself. They generally now have some sort of front panel, and you can go through the various functions. One of them is set it up for Wi-Fi, and you pick that, and it'll ask you for the password and let you type it in on a fake keyboard, and there you go.
Oh.
You may have to pull out the manual for that printer.
Yeah. All right, I'll try that. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Yeah, one thing you have to remember is that it's only magic after you've set it up.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen automatically.
So if you do change your router, your wireless router, try with all your might to use the same name and password as the old one.
Unless the old password was password or admin or something not clever.
Because then most of your devices will reconnect, your phones, your tablets, you know, your Roku box, your thermostat. If it's the same name and password as the old router was, they'll probably find it again.
Yep. Right.
And that TV up in the extra bedroom that you've forgotten about that's on the network.
Oops.
Yeah. I did that when I replaced a router, a wireless router.
Well, that's what I got to do tomorrow. And I'm going to set it up with the same network name and same password.
Right, same SSID, the same password. Yeah. And then you may have to reboot your devices.
Oh, yeah.
But so what?
Yeah, no big deal.
Right, right, right. So, yeah, you got to be very careful when you do something like that. We tend to think of these things as instantaneous and magical, and indeed, that's true when it's wired.
And we IT people...
Because you don't need as much security when it's wired.
And we IT people foster that impression that it's magic right. and instantaneous.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's magic, but we're the magician, so yeah. back off.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and the you know what the magic is? We read the manual.
Exactly.
RTFM.
I tell people that all the time. How did you know that? Magic. Or I read the manual, yeah. you pick. You know,
RTFM.
One of those two, right.
Your
right.
Google foo is very strong.
I had the t-shirt that said that. It was amazing. I'd go by folks, they'd sit there and see RTFM. And some folks will sit there and give me a weird look. The others are going.
Yep.
They knew.
I've said this many times over the years, the difference between computer gurus and everybody else is the gurus read the manuals.
Yeah.
Done. Done. It's the first thing I reach for.
Well, yeah, because that was the fun part, to find out the inner parts and other stuff.
Right.
You know, the basis at least. And then from there, the door was open. You could go for, you know, and explore other stuff.
And I do it because mainly I'm just impatient. You know, it's faster yeah. to read how to do it right the first time and then yep. do it than it is to screw around for 45 minutes and then finally guess it the right way to get
well,
it
Well, a lot of that, too, is with the manual, too. You can skim through some of the stuff in that
right.
and pick out the points that you need because you know what you're trying to accomplish. And sometimes, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm familiar with that.
And I've done that 100 times before with slightly different models.
Yeah, right. And, you know, you're going down the list and, oh, that's what I'm missing. Boom, you do it. Bam, you're off and running, and you just keep going on through. And like I say, a lot of it is the same old stuff, but they can tweak it a little bit. And yep. that's what you've got to learn is be willing to do is with the manuals, is learning the different tweaks.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right.
And that's where us as repair guys, you know, have the oddness. We get great pleasure. And just like beta testers, you know, folks say, didn't you ever get frustrated beta testing, you know, because it would crash? No, that was the fun. You tried to break it.
Yeah, you bang your head against the wall for an hour, and then when it finally works, it just feels so good.
Exactly right. Or I'd be sitting there, and I'd be beta testing one of the softwares, and then it would crash it. It's like, yep, that did it.
Yep.
Now I can fill out a report, and that was the biggest thing. If you could find something wrong with it, be able to fill out the report and send it on in, because you were a beta tester.
You felt like a hero.
Yeah, because you found a flaw in it. And, yep.
Exactly right.
And that's basically what I had one box for, was just strictly all beta. Lori could never understand it. What? Why? Isn't that frustrating? I go, no, it's fun.
It's fun. It's fun when you're not doing it on your production machine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I had a separate box. Right. You know, it was not the best, but it was okay. And I could, you know, load it up because I always had a mirrored, you know, a backup drive of it. So if I crashed and burned it, I'd just swap out the drive.
Yep.
And then, boom, the next one, and I was up and running.
Yep.
So.
All right. I think we got time for
one more story.
One
yeah.
more story. On Wednesday, the Department of Homeland Security ordered government agencies to stop using any software products made by Kaspersky Lab. Officials cited concern about possible ties between Kaspersky officials and Russian intelligence agencies in the executive branch are expected to begin the process of discontinuing Kaspersky products within 90 days. According to the Department of Homeland Security, the risk that the Russian government, whether acting on its own or in collaboration with Kaspersky, could capitalize on access provided by Kaspersky products to compromise federal information and information systems directly implicates U.S. national security. The department's priority is to ensure the integrity and security of federal information systems. The order applies to all civilian government networks, but not the military, mainly because the Defense Department doesn't generally use Kaspersky software. The General Services Administration removed Kaspersky from a list of pre-approved technology vendors in July after press reports emerged linking the company to Russian intel. As Kaspersky Lab spokesperson said in a statement that the company is disappointed in the DHS decision and will provide additional information to confirm that these allegations are completely unfounded. The statement said that working inappropriately with any government would be detrimental to the company's bottom line, although they said it with a Russian accent, since 85% of the revenue comes from outside Russia. Congress was briefed on the move Wednesday, and some lawmakers said they weren't given advance notice. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, Democrat of New Hampshire, who'd been asking for action to be taken against Kaspersky for some time, praised the move. Applaud DHS for heeding my call to remove all Kaspersky products from federal agencies, the senator said on Twitter. This is where we do government business now. Kaspersky is a direct threat to national security. The giant tech and appliance retailer Best Buy removed Kaspersky products from its shelves last week. The Minnesota-based retailer felt there were too many unanswered questions, and so it has decided to discontinue selling the products. The federal ban could lead to pressure on state and local governments to ditch Kaspersky products as well. Well, that...
Just because Gene Kaspersky happens to be Russian.
Well, and the company is in Russia, and their programmers are Russian, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
But all your electronics are made in China, and that's okay.
That's okay. Well, all right. That music tells me you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. We're done for this week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. You really need to call earlier next week. 30 seconds to the end isn't enough time to take a call. But we'll be back next week. And in the meantime, don't go anywhere because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back with more sound bites in just 166 hours. Thanks for listening.